Okay, open to Exodus chapter 4. Exodus chapter 4. Colby, read main verse, Exodus 4, 27 through 31. Devin, Luke 10, 1. Freddie, Exodus 4:20. Stephen, read 1 Peter 3:7. Where are we at? Anthony, read Exodus 4:29. David, Proverbs 27:17. Gabe, Exodus 4:28, Dwayne, 1 Samuel 23:16, Robert, Ecclesiastes 4:9-12. I think that's all. We started looking at Moses. We're just kind of taking our time working through the life of Moses and looking at destiny, a life of destiny. So today, Moses is going into the promised land, or not the promised land, Egypt rather. And as he goes in, God connects him to his brother, or connects his brother to him. And his brother becomes his partner in ministry. And so this is an important principle, has to do with ministry partners. So I want to talk about today. Exodus 4, 27 through 31.
And Yahweh said to Aaron, "Go to the desert to meet Moses." And he went and encountered him at the mountain of God and kissed him. And Moses told Aaron all the words of Yahweh who had sent him and all the signs that he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron went, and they gathered all of the elders of the Israelites. And Aaron spoke all the words that Yahweh had spoke to Moses. And he did the signs before the eyes of the people. And the people believed when they heard that Yahweh had attended to the Israelites and that he had seen their misery. And they knelt down and they worshipped him.
Okay, ministry partners. Let's look at the need for partners. We understand that calling to a purpose in God is personal. It's individual. God speaks to someone personally. A blanket call, a blanket application will never work. God speaks individually, and that can come in different ways. That's why there are different stories of calling in the Bible, because it may come to you differently than the person next to you. But this text repeats a common theme in the Bible, and that is you can't enter destiny alone. You can't fulfill God's purpose in your life alone. Destiny is a partnership, and you need to remember that in life. Luke 10, verse 1.
After these things, the Lord appointed 70 others also, and sent them two by two before his face into every city in place where he himself was about to go.
Okay, two by two, that's the Bible principle. In other words, when God sends them, even though calling may be individual, you need to be with somebody else. That's the two by two principle. The greatest partner, of course, you could ever have in life is your wife, and that's the one. We did a whole lesson on this, I think it may have been last time. Is your wife is the greatest partner you can have. Exodus 4, verse 20.
So Moses took his wife and sons, put them on a donkey, and headed back to the land of Egypt. In his hand he carried the staff of God.
Okay, Moses took his wife and sons and set them on a donkey. So I want you to notice two things here. And just as a side note, this is why you need to read the Bible. The Bible is not like a book, right? If you read Moby Dick when you were a kid, if you read it again, you're probably going to get the same thing out of it. The Bible's not like that. How many years have I been reading the Bible? For some reason, I have never seen, it never registered this, when he went into the promised land, his wife and sons went with him. And that's a principle. But look here. The Bible mentions his family, and in the same verse, the rod, the staff of authority. That's a profound principle. In other words, your authority, spiritual authority, is connected to your marriage. You learn that. That's why I did a whole lesson on this. To ignore your marriage is foolish. because your authority is going to be connected to it. 1 Peter 3, verse 7.
In the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she is your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should, so your prayer will not be hindered.
Okay, the phrase used in his translation is equal partner. New King James, King James, heirs or inheritors together. You inherit something from God, and he says you do that together with your wife. Okay, we did a whole lesson on that. But now our text speaks about other ministry partners. And in this case, it's brothers who help you fulfill your ministry. Verse 27. Can I get that? Somebody have it.
Now the Lord said to Aaron, go out into the wilderness to meet Moses. So Aaron went and met Moses at the mountain of God, and he embraced him.
Read verse 29 as well.
Then Moses and Aaron returned to Egypt and called all the elders of Israel together.
Okay. So God wants Moses, he has a calling. Remember the burning bush? You are supposed to help deliver the people. But now, God tells his brother to join with him. And this is very, very important. I want you to think about this. This was of God. God was the one who put them together. If you think that in life, I just happened to meet this guy, or I just happened to have a brother in the church, you're making a mistake. God puts people together. I just saw this, in vivid color. A boy from Prescott, Arizona. God arranged for me to go to Perth, West Australia. And in Perth, I connected myself with other brothers. That's supernatural. I didn't know anything about Australia. But there was something of God. God wanted me to connect with my brothers in Australia. That was of the hand of God. That's true for you. This is more than just happenstance. I just happened to meet these guys. God puts people together. There are people in this room God has... He has engineered that you're supposed to be with them in life. And so we make a mistake if you're a loner. There are people, they're loners. I don't need anybody. You know, I'm pressing into God's will by myself. That's just not biblical. Right? John the Baptist was by himself and he was eating locusts. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a good plan for you. I don't know what you're going to be eating if you're by yourself. But your breath is not going to be good. I know that. You also make a mistake if you view your brothers as competitors. Because that's often how disciples look at it. Like, there's a room full of competitors. These guys, I got to make sure they don't outshine me because I got to fulfill my destiny. And if they look good, then I'm going to miss out. The disciples, who's the greatest? They're put together with life partners, and instead they're viewing them, I gotta make sure this guy doesn't get picked to be concert director over me. Who's the greatest? I'm better than you are. So you resent your brothers, you fail to help your brothers, you talk bad about them to try to get one over on them. So Moses and Aaron, here's the normal course of life, were growing up together. And Moses had no idea. You know, how many times did they fight and wrestle and argue, not having any idea that one day Aaron was going to be his ministry partner. Aaron was going to help him, enable him to do God's will. So this is for me going back, it's been more than 36 years since I was sent out of the church in Perth, West Australia. So I come back 36 years later. I was just there a few weeks ago. And there are brothers that we connected. My ministry, my life has been joined to them. In this room are brothers that are going to help you enter your destiny. And you need to understand that. That's the hand of God. That's the will of God. Let's talk about the power of partners. So why is this important to God? If calling is individual, why does he want you to have ministry partners? Of course, your wife is most important, but brothers. Proverbs 27:17.
As iron sharpens iron, so people can improve each other.
Okay, that's what, New Century Version, yep. New King James, sharpens the countenance of his friend or improves each other. That's good. It's like a knife on a steel rod or a whetstone. So there's an improvement. So think about this. Partners inspire each other. If you have ministry partners, they inspire. And that's, of course, if you choose the right person. But when you talk about the things of God, it helps you to be inspired to do God's will. Verse 28.
So Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord, all the words of the Lord who had sent him, and the signs which he had commanded him.
So God tells Aaron, I want you to go to your brother. He meets him, and Moses is telling him, imagine that conversation. And this bush was on fire, and a voice, God spoke to me. That had to be exciting. And the signs, he told him about the signs, and maybe he showed him that whole leprosy thing, like, you know, like, can you believe this? Throwing the staff down, turning into a snake. That would be more than just like, bro, what have you been doing lately? You know, that's inspiring. I remember and I'm freshly reminded because I just came from Perth to be with back then. We talked the will of God. I didn't personally know anybody. Probably in those days there was such an atmosphere. Probably people who weren't called lied. They probably lied and said they were because there was such an atmosphere. We talked about it. We talked about one day we want to preach and where we were going to go and dreams that we had of God. It inspired us. That there was something about that we were interested in the things of God, and there's an inspiration. Iron sharpens iron. It was making us better men. The supernatural is like that. Is when I began to hunger for the supernatural, there were only like two guys that I even knew to speak to. And I was pastoring in Australia at the time, but when we would talk about the supernatural, it inspired me. And then hopefully in my life, what I want is I want to inspire other people. So partners inspire. That's part of what you want. Partners encourage each other. In life, when I think about how idealistic, naive is a word that means not having full information. I went into the ministry, I had no idea all that life would bring. This is why people who want to go to fortune tellers and know the future, are you insane? I would have run screaming from life if I knew all the bad things that would come my way. You will have dark days. You will be discouraged. I don't care how powerful and spiritual you are. You need partners to encourage you and to lift you up. 1 Samuel 23:16.
Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand.
Strengthen his hand, New Century Version, strengthen his faith in God. That's important. David is, I don't think I can do this. I can't go on. Jonathan, encouraged in that. Ecclesiastes 4:9-12.
Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken.
Okay, that's a famous scripture, is that if you fall, one can lift you up. That's what you want in life. You need somebody that can encourage you. You want somebody that can pull you back from the edge. Pull you off the cliff. So if you approach life as a loner, If you approach life like everybody else is a competitor, I don't want to connect to anybody, I'm telling you, life is not going to go well for you because you need them. Then partners correct each other. So we know God told Aaron to come, but then at a crucial moment in time, Moses had to rebuke Aaron. You know, that whole golden calf thing. So Aaron didn't always do right. And so that's part of it. That's safety. Think about this. Some people have the idea that if you have a friend, they back you no matter what you do. Right? Even if I'm wrong. Isn't there a country song? He's got your back even if you're wrong, or you know, some such crazy nonsense. But you will have you'll have times where people are wandering into rebellion or false doctrine, crazy ideas. You know what's very discouraging to me is often I got to deal with somebody who's insane by this point spiritually. They're a rebel. They're causing damage. You're about to destroy their life. And then after the fact, I knew he was like years ago. And he, dude, didn't you care about your friend? You let them talk smack. Didn't you look them in the eye and say, what the heck are you talking about? You're insane. You need to talk to pastor or I will. Isn't that love? Paul rebuked Peter about his hypocrisy, right? This is Peter. The inner circle with Jesus Christ, but his hypocrisy with the Jews. And he told him, that's going to hurt your ministry. That's going to hurt your effectiveness with other people. So a partner is not just somebody who agrees with everything you do. There may be times where they look you in the eye and tell you you're wrong. And that's what you need. So the blessing of partnership. Relationships, the reward of life is relationships. I'm going to tell you, I've been in ministry now for over 36 years. So sometimes you may be doing well. Sometimes you may be not doing well. Sometimes you may be up. Sometimes you may be down. Sometimes you get the bear and sometimes the bear gets you. The constant in life is relationships. That is a reward in itself. Going to Australia, just there are friends that I have there that I made when I was a teenager. And just the joy in life that I have them in my life, that is a reward in itself. Apart from anything else, because that's what you need. I've had friends that have fallen into sin and done wrong, and they're still my friend, right? They come back, they're broken, they're needing to repent. They're still my friend. I'm with them because a relationship is a reward in itself. And I pity people who view everybody else as, how can I use you, or you're a competitor. You fail to understand what a joy friendships are. I am amazing. Paul and Debbie Graham have been our friends since we were teenagers. And, you know, we go back now, it's 36 years since I've lived there. And you come back and it's like putting on an old comfortable pair of shoes. It's just, we fit because God put us together. That's a reward in itself. And then the other thing about partnerships is you can share in a brother fulfilling their ministry. That's what partnerships do. That's what relationships do. Aaron, in some way, helped his brother Moses fulfill his destiny. That's what you want. If I can be with you, if I can inspire you, if I can encourage you when you're down, if I can maybe rebuke you when you're wrong, and you enter your destiny in some way, you had a part in that. And that is a great blessing in life. Let's talk finally about choosing partners. You know what needs to happen? You need to seek out ministry partners. That has to be a deliberate choice. So you need to know that you need partners in life and say, I am going to find them. Now, Of course, it is, you need to choose wisely. Not everybody can be a ministry partner. You can have relationship. I have lots of relationships with people, but they're not my ministry partner in the sense that I'm talking about here. Sure, we're all in the same fellowship, or maybe we're in the same church, but they're not my partners in this sense that this text is talking about. And what I see there, guys, that I'm stirred, I want to do the will of God, and they choose badly. They surround themselves, right? The old illustration, it is easier to pull someone down than it is to pull somebody up. So that means then what you want to do. Pastor Richard used to say, if you want to be a 100%er, surround yourself. Get near 100%ers. Part of the reason why it was easier for me to go all in for God, but because the friends that I chose, they were all in for God. Right? I didn't pick any friends that when I talked about, man, I'm calling him and he said, oh, dude, you don't want to do that. That'd be, what about your future? And then, I don't want to hang out with people like that. I wanted people that were on the same page. So you have to seek them out, but choose wisely. Number two, you need to invest in ministry partners. Don't approach people as in, what can you do for me? You need to look at life as, what can I do for other people? You need to invest time. It takes time to build relationships. You need to invest in their ministry, what they're involved in. How can you help them? And thirdly, you need to maintain ministry partners. Everything good in life requires maintenance. You learn that. You want stuff, you want nice stuff. Okay, it comes at a cost. You got to maintain it. And that's true in stuff. It's true in especially the highest maintenance is marriage, right? But that's true in relationships. And so that's an important thing to maintain connection. That is what I choose to do. Paul Graham knows if his phone rings after 9 o'clock at night, he already knows who it is. He doesn't even have to look at caller ID. It's me, just because of the time change. I can call him in the morning and it's nighttime there. And I do that. There are people around the world that I call, I text, you know, of course, visits or whatever. That's maintaining a connection. That's something that takes effort. You got to do that. I'm thinking of them, not just thinking of me. So at the end of the day, then, this is now we're at the point they enter into their calling, their destiny, and they do that together. That's true for you. There's nobody you're going to enter in destiny alone. So you better choose ministry partners. Okay, let's open for some questions then. Nate.
Pastor, obviously when you go out to dinner with your wife, and you're kind of able to turn off I've noticed it's kind of like my approach. Is like, because I had friends when we were out or doing out, sometimes I just kind of turn off like being safe, but like just turn off being pastor. Is that something that you're able to do occasionally? I mean, or is that unhealthy to think that way?
Well, as a couple, absolutely. You know, several things, Nate. Number one, humor really helps in life. Humor is very, number one, I'm suspicious people don't have a sense of humor. There's something wrong there. But so as a couple, no, I don't sit down with other couples and we just talk the ministry and the things of God. There with my friends, there are appropriate times that we'll talk ministry, but we also just get together and laugh. You know, again, I'm just freshly reminded from being there, Paul Graham is hilarious. We get together and we laugh. You know, we catch up, grandkids, what's going on in life, we're just chatting. Now, we can talk ministry at an appropriate time. Couples, yeah, I don't think I ever get together with couples unless they're asking for counseling. You know, but I don't ever get together with, you know, my wife and other people and just sit there and just talk about, you know, counseling and problems and, you know, challenges of ministry. No, that's more where we are. That's downtime. typically. Yeah, that's not wrong. No, that's healthy, I think, yeah. Somebody else.
Pastor, what do you look for when choosing a ministry partner?
Somebody who is clearly wanting the will of God. And that's the key. Who is involved? Who's excited about the things of God? When I hear them speak, you know, their life. Do I see them on outreach? You know, in different things. That was a simple thing for me was people who are involved in outreach, right? That's really where I connected with Lisa was on an outreach. Seeing her, I wouldn't have considered anybody that wasn't on outreach in prayer, basic spirituality. But then, you know, you have to understand, in addition to ministry essentials, there are personality differences. You don't click with everybody. There are people you fit and you click. So there may be multiple people that you can choose, and then there are people that you get along well with them. That's fine. But there has to be some basic things that you have in common and a common direction. And that's, you see the evidence of their lives, which is the advantage of being in the same church, right? If you have half a brain, it's not hard to work out in church who is barely committed. It's not hard to understand, right? And then who is more committed? So then our pool is not 650 people. Our pool is smaller, isn't it? So then you're able to choose out. Then it's, you know, who is who do you fit with, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
I've read somewhere about in relationships having a circle of three people that you can usually maintain as a close relationship with, you know, and then there's other circles and stuff. Is it possible to have a close connection with, you know, what is that? Is there a number of people?
No, I don't think there's any number, you know. The bottom line, you need a good friend. You know, you'll learn in life that there are different levels. I have men that I'm connected to on different levels. I have some connection to. I don't have regular all the time people, but there's not a number. I mean, of course, do the math. It's not, probably you're not going to have 50 close friends. It's just, that's not humanly possible to maintain. Yeah, normally there'll be a few.
Have you ever had a close friend and partner change in their convictions and those things?
Absolutely.
How did you handle that? To what extent is it appropriate to admonish? To what extent do you have to step back and say, I guess we're not going to be together in this way?
Well, yeah, that all depends. For me, the extreme is rebellion. You know, of course, you have guys that they backslide. I have friends that have backslidden. I love them, care for them. It's just not going to be possible for us to continue to have the same level of relationship. That's backslide. That's sin. Rebellion would be next to sin. If you talk smack about my pastor, my church, I'm finished. We don't have relationship. We have nothing in common now. That's a crucial thing. So, but then you find along the road is people that are getting off track. Yeah, if you care for them, you look them in the eye and tell them, "You're dude, what's happened to you?" But at the end of the day, it's not my job to live their life for them. It's not my job to hound them. I express my opinion, but there's a balance in life. It's the same with kids. It's the same in anything. Is you can't always hammer somebody. You can't always love somebody. It's both, right? So I love you, but there obviously if someone changes toward the ministry or whatever, the nature of your relationship is going to have to change. I'm going to connect with people who we're going the same direction. Somebody who's wandering off, I will still love you. I'll pray for you. We'll still have some level of relationship, but it can't be the same. Or it's just not. Because I have to have ministry partners. You're no longer a partner with me. Yeah? So, but you don't give up on them. I don't leave them for dead. I'll never speak to you again. because they can come back online, you know? That's, and again, how many questions do people ask me? That's, you got to pray for wisdom. When do you rebuke? When do you leave it? That's, pray for wisdom. But it just has to be done, yeah.
So you talk about inspiring each other if you get together, verbalizing the will of God. Is it true that by speaking out the will of God, that it helps it to actually come to pass? I've heard words of spirits, and, you know.
Well, yeah, in a way. I mean, let's have balance. It doesn't mean if we just get together and go, I'm going to have a church of 5,000 people, like, and the church of 5,000 is suddenly created. What it is, number one, speaking it out is important for you. That's why it is important when God does something in your heart, you need to tell somebody. Because it cements it. It's the same as, you know, if you believe in your heart, confess with your mouth. That's a Bible principle. You get saved, you need to tell somebody. If you're called, you need to tell somebody. That's very important that you go on record. So what it does, it cements it, right? It solidifies. That's number one. But there also is a stirring. Iron sharpens iron. When you're talking about it, it's like it refocuses you. We have, you know, we're like kids with ADHD. It's like, I want to do the will of God. Look at the pretty butterflies, you know. So when you're talking with your friends and they're on the same page, it's a constant refreshing of what I'm supposed to be doing. It keeps it alive in that way.
So would you distance yourself from people who don't, like, you're like, yeah, man, God's going to help us, blah, 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 and they're like, yeah, not about everything else, right?
Yes, absolutely. But please understand, this is not a superiority issue. Okay, this is not I'm elite and you're a peasant. It is not. It is actually for your own spiritual health. That's the point. The nature of our relationship changes. I don't have any downer friends. I don't need it. Listen, life has enough downers for me. I don't need it. I don't need somebody else to pull me down. So if you're like, you know, if you're Dr. Depresso, we're just not going to have a relationship. It's not going to work for me. Okay? I'll just call the devil. I don't need you, you know. So yeah, but that's true. But you understand, yeah, there are people that's like, they're just not on that's not their thing. They're not hungry for the things of God. Love you. I chat. We're in the same church, or we're in the same fellowship. That's great. But as far as, you know what, I am going to invest my time. We're going to get together in my limited time. We're going to give 3 nights a week to somebody who's not going in the same direction. That just, no, I can't. So I love you, but no, we're not going to have it. And that is not a superiority. You never want to think that anybody who's not, that may be just God's calling, that may be their personality, that may be their speed. You need those people. A church is made up. We have people in our church that are not red hot on fire, you know, but they are contributing. We are all doing it together, but we're talking about ministry partners. That's a different issue. So you never want to give the impression, if you're not a serious man in the morning, then clearly you are from hell. No, that's their speed. We do it together. But ministry partners, they have to be going the same speed, the same direction. That'll help you. Yeah.
How do you balance venting or pouring out what's on your heart to your ministry partner of, hey man, I'm going through this, versus pulling them down? Like, that's not your intent, but maybe they can't handle it, or they can't, you know, they don't know the answer. Is that something you should do with your pastor only?
Well, yeah, I can't give that answer because that would depend on the problem, right? You may be totally stressed over the fact that your car broke down. That's not necessarily something like, I can't talk to anybody but the pastor about cars, you know.
Yeah.
So, but then there are issues that you need to speak to a pastor. So it's not a simple answer that you need. But yeah, there are people that it wouldn't be appropriate to speak about certain problems to. That's true. Whether that's because that's not their calling, or because, yeah, there would be things that would overamp them. You know, there are people that they're just, There are problems in life that some people, their heads would explode if you explained all that's going on in life. So, yeah, you just gotta choose wisely. Yep. If you're talking to somebody and smoke starts coming out their ears, that's probably a bad sign. Oh, David?
I've had numbers of guys that I've kind of had that dynamic with, but over the years, they've gone on the pastor for years now, so we're not physically as close, not calling each other all the time or anything.
Sure.
So does it make sense to, over time, form a ministry partnership with the people that are in the same church as you, to work together with ministry?
Oh, absolutely. And that's relationships. Relationships evolve, right? So there are, as I say, I started ministry relationships. I started in Australia, but then in the process of time, it was no longer God's will for me to be in Australia. So I'd be foolish if my only relationships were there. People would come to me in America, like, I only talk to Aussies. Yeah. Do you love Vegemite? No. that wouldn't make sense. In the process of time, Paul Stevens, a very close friend of mine now, I didn't even know him until I moved back to America. So, relationships evolve. And that's what happens. You're in the body, your friends go out, so you still have a relationship with them. You better be forming other relationships here as well. And so you have different, I have all levels of relationship. So in relationships, I choose people that were on the same page. I try to choose people that are better than me in some way, because they help me, they sharpen me, right? I have relationship with men, they're just maybe better human beings than I am. And that's a good thing. I don't want to find some half saved loser, and be my friend. Yeah. So you need relationships evolve. That might evolve because of they get sent out, that might be evolved because of distance. That might evolve. I've sadly had friends that we were ministry partners and they've chosen to backslide, they've chosen to rebel. So that evolves. So I just, okay, I loved you then. We're not going to have relationship. I'm sorry. We're not on the same page. And so I form new relationships. So forming new relationships is not that old relationships are disposable. That's not what I mean. But out of necessity, you have to be forming new relationships and moving on, yeah.
Do you ever have to have a conversation with a friend that is in rebellion where you're like, no, or
yeah.
Do you just let it be and not really say anything to them?
Oh, no. If you love somebody, I would always say something to them. Yeah, we've had discussions. That comes back to if you don't like having difficult conversations, then life will be a struggle because you need to. And that's one of those in rebellion, that's one of the things that frustrates me sometime, of course, because I'm at the level where I got to deal with it now when it's radioactive now. It just frustrates me when now I'm at that level. It's like, didn't anybody care about this guy? Anyway, he's been doing this for 20 years, for crying out loud. Nobody looked them in the eye and told them they're wrong. Nobody called the pastor back when maybe the problem wasn't, nuclear war. So, yeah, no, I think if you care about somebody, you always speak to them. Absolutely. But if there's not going to be repentance, that may be as simple as, I disagree and I'm not going to have relationship with you. Our relationship changes because I totally disagree. Mm-hmm. And rebellion is one of those. So that may be that you rebuking somebody can cause them to repent. That would be the hope, right? So,
is there a large value in finding sometimes older friends, especially when you're younger, or is it kind of just a preference thing, but sometimes having those older connections with people that have more years of experience?
Well, I, again, I, you need to seek out. You need to seek out wisdom, as I. That's what I just said. You need to seek out people who are better than you. Often that may be an age issue, but you also need relationships on your level as well. So, yeah, you just need to seek out wisdom where you can find it. You seeking wisdom may not necessarily. I can seek wisdom from people that I'm not best buds with. That's a different issue. But we're talking about relationship that also involves, flows into ministry. They're both. You know, maybe, you know, the Bible only tells us certain information. Maybe Moses and Aaron told lots of fart jokes. I don't know. Right? You know what I mean? I mean, maybe they laughed about potty humor. I don't, you know, all we see is that the Lord said, you know. But there's something about a ministry relationship. Come on, if they're brothers, you know they had history. They talked about stuff. So that's my point. Your question is wisdom. Yeah, I speak wisdom from people, but I'm not necessarily going to hang out with them all the time either. I will seek their wisdom. You need somebody you have relationship and they help you as well at the same time. That's a crucial thing. Anybody else?
You talked about, you know, guys that get funky spiritually and start going off into rebellion and stuff like that. What is typically the root cause of that you see?
Well, you know, from my rejection series, they're always rejected people. Rejected people who get any level of success. It does bad things to them, and then people who are rejected, then they get offended. There's an offense that they hold on to and justifies them.
Do you ever see that those guys, like, they start studying things that they shouldn't and stuff like that? And they start having, like, funky doctrinal things and stuff like that?
Yeah, I do. You know, back... In these days, the internet is a bummer. The internet's a blessing. I Google illustrations. That's wonderful. But on the other hand, the internet's a bummer because then you get every person can find dumb doctrines on the internet. You know, yeah. So yeah, sure, they can.
You should be careful about what you study and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that'd be true. And then you got a friend who's wandering in a fall again. Like, what the heck? What's wrong with you? You know. Yep. Yeah, which is what I did, what I try to do, and you know, you weren't saved at that time, but a doctrine caused great destruction in Australia and numbers of our churches, the Brownsville thing. Yeah, I had hard conversation with people. You're out of your mind. This is wrong. I refuted biblically, you know, or tried to. So yeah.
What was the basis of that? Did someone just like come up with that, or was there a book or something?
Well, you know, it came originally. It was the Laughing Revival in Canada, the Toronto Blessing, and a guy from Florida went up and got involved in it, and then supposedly this revival broke out, but it wasn't a revival of salvation. It was just Christians coming with odd manifestations, heavy emphasis on worship and funky manifestations of it. Yeah, something different.
Yep. You said that you have to, like, if you have to have a conversation with someone, like, that they're going off the deep end or whatever, like, how would you go about that? Like, you just call them and then tell them they're doing dumb things or what? Like,
well, as far as how you speak to them, that would depend on where they are. I would call them if they don't live in the city. They live in the city, always better to look somebody in the eye, right? Yeah, so it's a matter of, in relationship, you're appealing for relationship, right? I care about you, what you're doing here, this is, doesn't make sense, yeah. So how you come across to people is an important thing. And you learn to have, that's why I say to guys, you need to learn to have difficult conversations. It's a skill. So you need to do it. It's not comfortable, but you got to do it. You got to learn how to do it. And you learn how to do it well and effectively. So people can feel your heart. You just call them and say, dude, you are whacked. You know, that's I don't think that's going to have a good effect. They're like, I'm whacked. I need to repent. You know. But when you appeal to people and they know that you care for them, they're more likely to listen to you. Yeah. Anybody else?
Yeah, I got one.
Okay, all right. Anyway, it was boiling on the inside, and out it comes. All right.
So when you know, as men, as we're trying, like as family men, when we're trying to make a life decision for us and our family, right? And some people, when some men make decisions, it's successful. But some others may make a decision, and they're just like, man, do I make this decision? And then they fail if it's not what it was meant to be, or somebody might have said, hey, maybe you shouldn't go this route, or you should. But the decision's on you, and you do it anyways because you feel as a man that I'm going to go ahead and this is going to work, but it doesn't work. Or, you know, is that rebellious? Is that like a spirit of being rebellious because you're like, no, I think this is the right one?
That would depend. But in general circumstances, no. Life is learning experiences. You learn. No matter what happens in life, you learn. Right? Put your hand on a hot stove, you learn. And that's true. So you learn by bad decisions. There's safety. If you're rejecting wise counsel, you know, number one, Stephen, is that if you're talking about life-altering decisions, you'd be wise to bounce that by somebody wiser than you, right? What do you think about this? Maybe they have a perspective you hadn't thought about. Now, if you're getting wise counsel and somebody says, don't do this, and you do it, that's different than just, I felt the best at the time and tried it and didn't work out. You know, so it's not necessarily rebellion, just wasn't smart. Mm. And you learn. Then hopefully the idea of when you make a decision doesn't work out well, then you learn. Hopefully you don't do that again. That's the idea. So everybody will make mistakes. You just learn from your mistake. Don't do that again. That's when when my daughter was young, don't touch the wood stove. It's hot. And what's she gonna do? Of course. She learned. She didn't have to do that 25 times. Once was enough. I learned. Hopefully we're like that. Stubbornness is and we keep on and keep on and keep on. That's then stubbornness and rebellion. Yeah. So learn from your mistakes. Very good. Okay.